not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show. Stevie's back with myself and Conan on a Thursday. Stevie, you got down the road in the car. The car's not still not fixed. Just tell the world about these first world problems of yours.
Is this not a sporting show? I hope you haven't been slagging me off in the last few weeks.
Might have. I'm surprised you're not listening to the podcast. And it's very disappointing, Stevie. You just hung yourself there. Want to start off here, lads, by talking about the Cork County Board. And very, very, very disappointing developments this week, and this was in the Cork Examiner, the Irish Examiner, and they've rejected, they've voted no to the Club Players Association's motion that they want the recording of votes at the Congress. So delegates go to Congress, and instead of voting in secret, it's more transparent so people can see how they voted. Have they followed the mandate from the county board, and have the county board followed the mandate probably from the clubs as well? They voted no. So Tracy Kennedy, the chairperson of the Cork County Board, she kind of personalised it, which I thought was most disappointing, because this is nothing personal against any delegate, because there are going to be honest delegates and there might not be honest delegates. They all could be honest, they all could be dishonest. This is just going to completely clear up this fact and have people be able to follow how this is working. And she said, something similar came up at county level when I was a club delegate, and I remember saying at the time, if my club can't trust me to vote the way they ask me, what am I doing here? Similarly, if you as a board can't trust us, what are we doing here? See, like, I mean, that's not the purpose of this. Like, I mean, making it about a personal mistrust of you, Tracy. That's not what this is about. This is about across-the-board transparency, so that who's to say there's two counties out of the 32 that might go rogue? You don't know. And why have that suspicion when it can be fixed? I just don't get why county board... And Frank Murphy, which will surprise absolutely nobody, he was against it, and he was saying that it's totally impractical. You can't have 400 delegates voting on 40 motions, and he was trying to make out that practically this wasn't possible. And he says, we know where this motion's coming from that crowd. And it's just this attitude against the CPA, who are representing club players. And this is no surprise to me, the attitude of a county board towards its players and its club players. You don't mess with this. This is our business. Go away and stop annoying us. We'll deal with this. Be off with you. And we're voting against it. Really, really disappointing.
From that crowd, huh?
I agree that it's probably not that practical. Like, you know, they counted. Like, if anybody's ever been to Congress, it's a pain in the arse.
Is it not just push a button, Conan? Is that not? It's electronic now, so I'm sure it can be just recorded which way you're voting. No, it's not like a counted on a vote of hands. It's a yes, no on electronically, and can that not be recorded? How each one where they're sitting?
We find out who the counties rejected or not. Anyway, we find that out, and especially if they're speaking up against a motion and that. But no, it's not about the clubs.
You don't find out, Conan, because, like, I mean, a county can reject it like Cork, but who's to say if the delegate that goes to Congress doesn't actually think, well, I don't think that should be rejected, I'm going to go on my own, and they vote yes against what the county wished. So who's to know whether he did that or not? So, like, there's no... The delegates that go to Congress have complete power to vote whatever way they want, and their heads can be turned, and the county chairman could go to them and go, here, I know they voted this way, but let's... You know what? Now, this doesn't suit us. Like, I mean, this, don't think this doesn't happen.
But there's also a pressure in the transparency of it all. Like, you know, this isn't how democracy works all over the world. There is a sanctity in the ballot booth, you know, being able to vote in secret, and that's why polls are so inaccurate.
Yeah, but you're voting for yourself. These delegates...
people are, like, in Congress, like, in government and stuff, they're voting for representing their community and stuff. You know, they're there, entrusted to do that. Like, that's how it works all over the world, you know. And I know the GAA is a little bit different and stuff, but there is a pressure from people knowing who you're voting for and stuff as well. And, like, that sort of talk that you might get swayed in the bar room the night before the Congress and stuff, but, you know, you might equally get swayed just by the perception of what people are thinking, and you voting away.
But you're not getting swayed, though, Conan. You're supposed to vote as your county has mandated you to vote, and that's public. So this will just stop the potential of a delegate not following that mandate. That's all this is doing. Yeah, like, I mean...
I think, listen, for the transparency of it all, you know, what have they got to lose, and why are they coming out against it? Why are they even releasing statements about it, you know? So,
well, this is coming out of a county board meeting. Yeah. Like this is put, like some delegates in the Cork County Board, you know, were for it, but the majority, like a strong majority, were against this. Now, here's an example. I spoke with Kieran Levy, right, who ran for the Laois County Board chairman's job, which was up maybe 2 months ago. So he canvassed around all the clubs around Laois, right? And he rang them all up, especially on the hurling side, and did all this because I was in contact with him. I didn't want the other lad to win it. That's
we know that. We've seen your tweets.
We did see your tweets. But anyways, Kieran, I know Kieran a long time, and I thought he was a better candidate, right? So that's basically it. Anyways, Kieran says to me, "Geez, I've been ringing around Woolley, and I think I'm going to win this tomorrow night. Like I've had assurances from enough clubs to know that I'll win this if they all vote the way they've promised me." Of course, he didn't win it. Yeah. So they lied to him. Like, this happens in the GAA all the time. It's politics. It's saying one thing and doing another. And this was just a step in the direction of stopping this cloak and dagger kind of stuff, and just have no kind of whispers around the corners about, "I wonder, has that happened?" This just leaves it out in the open. And have you followed your county's mandate? And there's no discussion about it then. Like, I mean, I can't understand the logic of not wanting that.
Yeah, probably the most disappointing thing for me out of this is how, you know, Frank Murphy and maybe the Cork County Board are belittling the importance of the CPA. You know,
there's no secret about that. Yeah. There's no secret about
and
that.
And that is disappointing because that is, you know, I suppose the real reason how the GAA was built from the clubs up, and, you know, by basically putting a line through their motion is saying, you know, "We don't want to listen to you, we don't want to hear you, so forget about what's going to be said or done in the future from you. We aren't listening."
Yeah, and of course another thing CPA want to fix is they want to fix this whole structure, because as Colin mentioned, the clubs should be dictating to the county boards how they vote. Now, the clubs have a delegate that go to county board meetings. Are the delegates that are going to the county board meetings actually discussing this with the club and getting the mandate from their club before they go to county board meetings? Or are they just deciding, "This is what I want to do at the county board meeting"? So are all these, it's supposed to be democratic, yeah, and it's supposed to start from the ground up. But I'm not sure it's starting from the ground up. I'm not sure these big motions are being put to the clubs for discussion before these county board meetings. I think these county board meetings are just being had, and the delegates from the clubs are going the way they personally want to go. Now, in some counties, that might not be the case, but I'm sure it is the case in certain ways. So the whole structure of it needs to be reformed if it's supposed to be the democratic organisation that everybody keeps telling us that it is.
On that point there, I think we have to be realistic in terms of, you know, what we are expecting from the club delegates as well. A lot of clubs are well run and well organised, but quite a few clubs aren't as well run as others, and they wouldn't have I suppose the facilities and the personnel to maybe have meetings to discuss what's going to be said and done at inter-county meetings.
Yeah, so their delegate just makes up their own mind.
Well, in my experience, I have had those meetings where you've been involved in the club or making that decision that goes to the county, but my worry about this transparency is that those meetings will be affected then at the club level, because it's like, right, if everyone's going to know how we're voting, I think it would ruin that debate that people would have in secret.
But no, because Conan, everybody knows how the Cork are voting on this now, so that delegate's not to blame for that. Like, that he's just following what that meeting, what the majority,
but if everyone finds out what the club are dictating and stuff, then it just ruins the actual genuine debate that you can have and then direct it on.
They're doing that anyways, because each delegate now is on public record for which way they have wanted to vote. Like, it's not how they all vote, it's who spoke up at the meetings we know about, but the local journalists will know who spoke up for it and who's spoken up against it. I don't think you're hiding, just because I don't think any part of that process, like you're talking about, changes in any way. This is just to make sure that the delegate that goes to Congress follows that proposed motion. I don't think that's going to highlight what's been said at a club meeting or anything. I don't see how that changes anything.
I just maybe it's wrong, but I'm just comparing it to real life outside the GAA. Like, and if you knew that people knew what way you were voting, it would affect what you're doing. And I think there's a reason why it is. yeah. in a ballot booth so you can do it in private and do what you actually want. And I know what you're talking
about.
You're
talking about something completely different.
No, but I know it's a delegate representing people. But again, this works. The structure works, and it does work in democracy outside as well.
Okay, we'll agree to disagree because I'm not sure what your argument actually is there. Cluxton has 100 league appearances. So I thought this was a strange one. He's 100 league appearances and he's got 91 championship appearances. I was surprised that they were so close. And we know he plays every bloody league game that's going. And that's yeah. almost like a criticism. Maybe he didn't down through the years. But like, I mean, Dublin usually get a run in the championship. But to have your league appearances and championship appearances close to equal yeah. is a strange
but
one.
The problem with Dublin is for maybe the last 12, 13 years, they've been going on maybe a run in the championship where they're getting 7-8 games consistently. And what is it, the amount of games in a league game or in league format? Seven games if you get to a final, possibly 8. So, you know, they're getting an equal amount of games on a yearly basis simply because they're challenging for titles always.
Yeah, and listen to this. So he made his debut in 2002 as an under-21, and over the next 16 seasons he missed one championship game. It's not unreal. Well, that'll tell you as well why he's got 90 bloody one. Like, I mean, he's not missing championship games. Yep. The only game he missed, when was it?
When he was sent off.
Well, be a bit more specific.
The first round in 2004.
Yes, very good. He lost the loss against Westmeath because he kicked you the end, the last game. I thought that was interesting. I said I'd have to bring it up.
Well, what happened?
We'll not talk about it.
Well, you did nothing wrong. No, although maybe you were mouthing at him and winding poor Stephen up because he had a short fuse back then. Like, I mean,
I was quiet and innocent. But listen, you have to give him great credit. The modern day game, you know, with the amount of I suppose training sessions and activities that players and demands that are set on players, for him to stay injury free and at 36 years old to continue to line out week in week out in league and championship for his county yeah. has to be, you know, applauded.
I do think goalkeepers have it that bit handier though. Let's be honest about this, like injury free for a goalkeeper compared to injury free for a wing back midfielder, like it's so much easier to go injury free, although they do kick it out a lot.
They do kick it out and it could be prone to groin injuries, hamstring injuries then as well, you know what I mean? So yeah, you know, I would certainly say
they're not at the cold face though. They're not in there in the middle of the action. Like, sometimes I feel sorry for goalkeepers during the winter. Poor fella must be freezing down there. Like, I mean, some of them don't even wear tracksuit bottoms.
I don't know. I think, you know, having been involved with club teams over the last couple of years, you know, any hard running that's in training nowadays, you know, you expect your goalkeepers to be doing it. So they have to have a level of fitness as well. It's not like the old days when we were playing intercounty, Wally, you know. So the game has evolved and goalkeepers, there are demands in goalkeepers as much as anybody.
And you look down at the drills they're doing when you have a good goalkeeping coach, like, I mean, it's diving down to stop, jumping up, running out in, then diving down the other side. Like, I mean, it is like during games they don't do as much, that's all I'm saying, right?
Well, I would always have said from my point of view in the position I played that, you know, you're constantly stopping and checking your runs, it's like shuttle runs, but the goalkeeper does very similar type of training because they're down up and you know, it does take an impact on your body.
They don't get the credit maybe necessarily that they deserve though, even though they're not at the coal face. As you say, like, there's an argument that Cluxton's one of the greatest footballers of all time, but he's never in that realm because it's always just goalkeeper. He's best goalkeeper
I've seen him play outfield, and he's by far not one of the best footballers.
But he is playing football, and he is like, he's the most important player for Dublin. Like, they've done without some of the best players in Ireland over the last few years, and he's the one that they can't lose. And it's crazy that he hasn't had an all-star in the last 4 years. That's a joke.
It's absolute joke. And well, another thing just I noticed when I was reading that article in the Irish Times was he started all 8 of Dublin's league games last year, and he started all 3 so far this year. Like, Evan Comerford, like, what's going to happen with Stephen Cluxton? I think that's a mistake from Jim Gavin. He rotates all the team but doesn't rotate Stephen Cluxton. What if he does get injured? I know he's not injury prone, because in fairness to Cluxton, he's unbelievably dedicated, and the weights that lad's able to lift, like, he's a serious athlete. Really? Like, there's not he's a strong
But I would also say that Stephen Cluxton's looking at it and probably in the ear of Jim Gavin as well, and saying, listen, my career's going to be over in a few years, so keep playing me. I want to be playing as much as possible.
What happens, poor Evan Comerford, though? He hasn't experienced Hill 16. He hasn't experienced Croke Park. Like, I mean,
he's still picking up the medals.
I know, but he has to experience that, lads. He has to experience the pressure of a kick out after conceding two scores in a row and needing having that on your shoulders. He can't just be landed in if Cluxton gets injured in the Super 8s, for example, and it's thrown in there.
We understand that, and there is certain pressures to come with playing in front of a Hill 16 crowd that are on your back. But you know, at the end of the day, he's still getting the same training that Stephen Cluxton's getting, and he's being coached by the same goalkeeping coaches, the same backroom staff in Dublin, and I would still say he'd be well vetted in case he did get an opportunity.
Maybe Brian Howard and them need to be experienced with Cluxton, like all the boys that come in and rotate. They might need to practice with Cluxton because he's so important to the team.
Yeah, okay, listen, you can try and change my mind, but if Comerford should be getting action here, lads, there's no doubt about that. I do accept what you're saying, but I don't think Brian Howard might not even make the team. It's hard to know. We'll talk about Dublin in part two. Pat Spillane had a bit of a madcap idea here, lads. I think it was in the Sunday World. I'm not sure where he was writing it. I just saw headlines, but he wants to bring in a transfer system into the GAA. Now he is talking about the likes of Dublin, and I talked about this before. I was like, how many players outside of the 30 in Dublin are not getting into county football? There's so many players, and they're so good that could line out for other counties. I think counties should take advantage of the granny rule and try and get some of these Dublin players down to play with them. In hurling, for the weaker counties, they're allowed transfers. We saw some Kilkenny players, John Mulhall, played with Kildare last year, and there are other examples as well. Would it be an idea for fellas who are mad to play inter-county because Dublin can only pick 30 and have such a huge pick, and Dublin are against splitting Dublin in two, so these lads won't get inter-county action? Is there an argument to say that Division 3 and 4 teams, or even Division 4 teams, could maybe tap into those markets and get themselves an Eamon Fennell, for example, a midfielder from Dublin who might want to continue playing? See, these lads might not want to go down to
Division 4. I'm just throwing it out here.
I'm not. This is Pat Spillane's idea. I'm just throwing it out for discussion here. Don't look at me like that, Stevie.
There's not too many inter-county transfers that take place in Gaelic games, you know, overall. And a lot of players' hearts couldn't really be set and going just in lining out for another county if their heart and soul isn't in it. And that's what it boils down to as well. You know, I know personally, there's no way I could have lined out for any other county, only Armagh. You know, even if I was playing in Dublin, I don't believe I could have transferred to Dublin. No way. So it comes to a personal choice as well, and where their I suppose heart and desire lies as well.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Like, I never made the Derry team, but I never thought, geez, I'll go up to Antrim and wouldn't have gotten the Antrim team either, but you know, I never ever thought that way. It was just like, oh well, not good enough, I'll try and get better. Yeah. Never got that much better. But I just think it opens up, like, you look at the residency rule in rugby, it just opens up that problem then as well, where you could have a whole Derry team that's not made up of any Derry players, you know, which is a real stickler. I think if you're down that route, it's going to get very messy. And like, do you start poaching people at underage then in Dublin, going into the under 16 camps and trying to get them over to Offaly at under 16? And it's just, it makes the whole thing not what the GAA is all about.
It's not what it's all about. I knew you'd be against this, Conan. Listen, Pat, sorry about that. We're voting in like Congress
against
here.
We're voting against this idea, Pat. But keep your ideas coming, Pat.
Usually, Pat hasn't had a talking point on this show yet in nearly 2 years, which is a big moment for him, and it has been shot down. So we'll try and get another one from Pat here. Right, lads, this is betting, and we slag off the GAA a lot on this show. We'll No, we don't slag them off. That's the wrong choice of words. We criticise them, and criticise them for a lot of different things, which I think is warranted. But when they do things well, I think they deserve credit as well. And I think Congress looks like it's going to endorse a ban on bookmaker sponsorship in Croke Park on this Saturday. That's proactive. And they've banned alcohol sponsorship, and they're now going to ban bookmaker sponsorship. And I think that's a step in the right direction. They're ahead of the curve. You see in Premier League, loads of teams, shirt sponsors are betting companies, like all around the advertising hoardings are like Bet365, you know, whatever they are. And we know gambling is a very, very serious problem with young people in the country today, and it's good to see the GAA taking a lead on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, gambling certainly leads to other problems as well, you know, probably suicidal thoughts as well amongst people who are addicted to gambling. And I know Oisin openly came out in his book to say that he had those type of thoughts as well. And anybody, Niall McNamee is another prime example, you know, he's a gambling addiction in the past, and it's becoming all too much common amongst Gaelic footballers and hurlers and I suppose high profile Gaelic players as well. And it's certainly a great step forward from the GAA point of view that they are proactive in terms of banning bookmaker sponsorship of any type of GAA capacity at all.
So the proposal, which would prohibit sponsorship by a betting company of any GAA competition, any team, any playing gear or facility, should receive strong support. So, like, I mean, that's good, and that's taking a lead on this. And Oisin McConville wants to actually take it a step further, and he wants to actually ban players betting on inter-county matches. Now, at the moment, you can't bet on games that you're involved in, which is perfectly fair. Yeah. I'm not sure how Oisin's proposal could be policed. Like, players don't have contracts. If you break it, what happens? Yeah, it's not like professional sport where it could be in your contract that you're not allowed to do it. I'm not sure how it could be policed. But McConville does make a good point, and I didn't really think of it like this. And that betting on GAA matches is a big problem for GAA players because they think they know it all about it. They think they can gamble heavy on this because they have a good inside line on it. And I didn't really think about it like that. And like, it's a sensitive subject, and I've got some first hand experience with a friend in stuff like this. And like, we do an accumulator on the podcast, and you wonder, are you doing the right thing or not? Like, I mean, but it's not illegal to gamble, you know. So like, yeah. I mean, where do you draw the line with having a bit of fun with it and doing it responsibly and doing a little €5 accumulator, but then are you glorifying it, and are you know,
yeah,
what I mean?
I don't think we're really promoting, we're having a wee bit of banter, we're giving a lighthearted tip, you know, at the end of each show. And
but is
and
that
that's
hypocritical to be giving tips on a national podcast?
It's not hypocritical, because at the end of the day, I'll go into bookmakers maybe on Saturday and put £5 or £10 on a couple
a
of football on an accumulator, and that's it. You know, some people can manage, you know, and control how to bet, and some people just have that addiction that they can't, and it spirals out of control, and that's the harsh reality of any type of illness like that. It's the same with alcoholics as well, you know. So, you know, people can go out and have a beer, others can't, because it spirals out of control for them. So I can see that it's a great step forward for the GAA point of view, but I do have the question, you know, how can it be policed, you know, if you're going to ban players from betting on inter-county games, because I think that would be quite difficult. Now, I'm not talking about players who are involved in those particular games, I'm talking about players that do believe, like Oisin says, to have an inside knowledge.
Are there going to be a few problems sort of in the short term for clubs? Obviously, like, I completely agree with this, but I heard Oisin McConville on Second Captains recently talking about Cross McGlenn sponsorship, and obviously when he was coming off the back of his problems, he had to advertise a betting company in front of his jersey. And he went to Cross McGlenn and spoke about it, but they sort of said, well, they're offering 10 times the amount of money than the last sponsor, so he sort of got on with it then, like. And that's, you know, that's the reality as well for some clubs. They needed that money at the time.
And I was thinking, like, with the alcohol sponsorship as well, like, how many local bars will, and that's needed with the club. Like, I mean, the local bar give you money, and it's obviously not a selfless thing because you'll all go in there and drink in there, but like, I mean, that's the deal that's made, and that was the criticism at the time. How are rural smaller clubs going to deal with the fact you're taking some sponsorship money off them?
Yeah, it will be quite difficult, because you know, in rural clubs in particular, the bar is the epicentre of that community, and you know, if the bar owners are willing to, you know, throw funds towards the running of the club, then it's very difficult to turn that away as well. And at the end of the day, all it is a logo and a name in front of a jersey, and like any other logo.
Yeah, but what's any advertising of, Stevie? That's all it's normalised then. Like, I mean, I think the big organisations definitely have a responsibility not to be pushing this. Like, I mean, because
should pharmaceutical companies be allowed to, you know, be endorsed on front of jerseys?
Why?
Well, they're promoting the pharmaceutical companies, you know, the make drugs.
Legal drugs.
Yeah, but people can get addiction to legal drugs as well.
Well, okay. I suppose, where does it stop then?
You know what,
like,
I mean?
Yeah.
There's an argument there for that as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is people out there with addictions to tablets. you know, quite a few people, probably more people addicted to tablets than what there is in alcoholics in the country, you know what I mean?
So yeah.
Listen, where does it stop?
No, it is true. Where does it stop then? Like, I mean, any addiction then could be an issue with sponsorship. But look, anyways, we will give the GA credit for putting a stop to this one. Anyways, it looks like that will go through Congress. Just to finish up here, lads, there's some mind games going on in Division 4. We'll finish on a more lighthearted one after that one's a little bit heavy.
I was backing under the haze there. Want transparency, you see.
Right, but listen to this. Yeah, you don't want any transparency. You showed your true colours here today, Conan. So Waterford manager, like, I mean, Stephen Poacher's going to think we're picking on him here. We're not at all. This is just completely just caught my eye and I thought it was funny. Waterford manager Tom McGlinchey, right, so he's asked why none of the top referees in the game are appointed to officiate Division 3 and 4 games. I thought that was a perfectly fair thing to say, because I know we spoke on the podcast here about a few terrible refereeing decisions in the Kildare-Tyrone game where they didn't continue the advantage rule. And I remember saying on the Monday, top referees, it must get much worse as you go down divisions, because the best referees are in Division 1. And, like, I mean, it would seem fairer if their top referees were just rotated around, and maybe they might land down in Dungarvan at a Waterford Division 4 game, but so be it. They'll kind of have that benefit of good refereeing. And I think if the GA is fair, then maybe that's the way they should do it. Or there's another way of looking at this: should the less experienced referees not cut their teeth down in the lower divisions where the national spotlight's on them? Look, there's probably two sides to this, but anyway, McGlinchey seemed to be a fair enough call from him. He feels the standards of referees appointed at the lower games is not as good as the refs to oversee the games in the top two divisions. I think that goes without saying. But Stephen Poacher took exception to this, and he thinks that there's a this is what Poacher says: I think there's some kidology and playing mind games and putting pressure on officials. I don't know what he's doing. I think the standards of referees in Division 4 has been very good, Poacher told the local paper. Now, I don't know about mind games in Division 4. I don't think Tom McGlinchey's comments are going to kind of sweep the nation and put pressure on a referee that's not even appointed to a game yet. I think Stephen Poacher might be over analysing this a little bit in his head to think that he's trying to put pressure on referees. I think it's a fair observation. I don't think mind games that maybe some referee or some managers, which would have the national media's attention, I can understand why they would throw some stuff out there, or Joe Brawley might throw some stuff out there. I don't think Tom McGlinchey talking to his local paper is necessarily doing that.
And just complaining after a game, probably hard done by or whatever. You know, it's not like Kieran McGeaney and Jim McGuinness's spat, was it 2011 where McGeaney was in charge of Kildare talking about Donegal's tactics?
That was mind games.
Yeah, that's
that was
deliberately putting a thought in the referee's head to look out for it. And Jim McGuinness obviously wasn't happy about that. But I don't even know if I agree. Like, if you see some of the referees in Division 1, I mean, I see Park Hughes in a Division 1 game and wonder, like, you know, is this the top referees in the top division?
But that's a different issue. That's
don't
a whole
don't
issue.
Don't be shagging off the arm of our referee, please.
Yeah, well, he is pretty finicky now, in fairness, isn't he?
Well, listen, like every referee, they have their good days and bad days, and I'm not...
But he's particularly finicky, though,
no,
right?
I'm not referee.
Stop defending it's only a referee.
I'm not defending anybody at all, but from a player's point of view, you want any referee to go out and do the thing for her. And that's just it. That's all you can ask. And I'm not saying that Paddy Hughes does it all the time, does it fairly all the time. He probably doesn't. But,
he's whistle happy, though, Steve.
From Division 1 all the way down to Division 4, what any team and management and players, set of players want is a fairness to the officiating, and that's all you can ask for.
Yeah, okay, right, listen, we'll leave it there, lads. We'll be back in a second.
You ready? Let's go!
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens, and it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show didn't look great. There was maybe if they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out terrible, but unlucky to lose. Like, let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name.
Fort Minor. All right. right, delighted to say new Leash manager John Sucrew is on the line now. John, how's things?
Good, Colin.
Great
Thank
stuff.
You very much.
I haven't been to see Leash playing yet. I was complaining on the podcast here that we're not national news at the moment in Division 4, so I have to watch the matches on television. But listen, it's been a good start to Division 4.
Yeah, it's been okay, John. Like we've got the results. Performances have been sketchy at times, like, but we've got the results, and that's really what it's about, trying to hammer out a few results. It's difficult enough down there in Division 4, and you know, with regard to where Leash has been at the last couple of years, we just need to try and keep stitching results together as best we can and see where we get to.
Yeah, because I suppose I think we've fallen asleep at the wheel a bit the last few years. Last year in Division 3, it was like, we'll never go down, we'll never go down. And suddenly we find ourselves in Division 4. And now the story is, Leash will get out, Leash will get out. But, you can't keep thinking these things are just going to happen.
Yeah, like, to a certain degree, there's an element of sleepwalking happening around the place. And, only the next couple of weeks will prove if we've kind of got out of that mode of sleepwalking our way through playing off all here. So, I mean, we have got our 3 wins, but there are only 3 wins. We've got 7 games, and you'll have to win probably 5 or 6 out of the 7 to try and make sure you're in a position to get into Division 4 final. So we've still got a mountain of work to do for the next couple of weeks, John, with regard to our chances of trying to get out of this division.
Yeah, is that something you identified as the sleepwalking, John? Because, that's something that's kind of obvious to me. Maybe too many lads guaranteed their positions and comfortable. And I think that's something pretty obvious for me looking from the outside that you've maybe tried to identify and change, and that there's a lot of new faces a lot of people wouldn't be altogether too familiar with, but some of the more established fellas might not be feeling as secure as they had been.
Yeah, look, I want you, everyone and people will talk about Leash, and Leash have had down through the years, have had a lot of talent in the county, and talent is one thing, but hard work and attitude is another thing, and you have to marry the two. And if you don't really have necessarily a good identification of the hard work and effort that's applied to playing into county football at this moment in time, then your talent gets kind of washed over by maybe inadequacies elsewhere. So we've kind of gone with, to a great degree, fellas who are showing form and training, and fellas who are really driving into this thing fairly hard. And today, the younger fellas have challenged, and some of the newer faces have challenged some of the more established faces on the panel, and have got success out of it. And now, what we're hopefully going to see is that response from the older fellas, and we're seeing it. And fellas are really pushing, and there's a bit more bite in training, and that bite can go up and go up, and it needs to keep going up, because I don't think we're near where we need to be just yet with regard to being at our potential. And that's all I'm looking for from the group, is to be at our potential.
Yeah, you're actually lucky enough, John, in that you've had a spying mission on the Leash kind of psyche. You've been in the dressing room with Justin McNulty, and you've been there, and you haven't been there as a manager. You've been there as kind of someone maybe lads can bounce stuff off, or you know, because when you're a trainer, you have that kind of relationship with the players that might be a little, not necessarily people are going to stop talking when you're in the room, So you kind of know the Leash players. You've had a great start maybe to your management career, is in that you kind of know the cliques, and you know how lads' minds works, and you kind of know the Leash psyche a little bit.
Yeah, well, I certainly know the Leash psyche. I'm up here living with about 7 or 8 years, and I've been involved from the, obviously, like you mentioned before, in a physio sense, and did a small bit of coaching with them at times, and then got out of it again to a great degree for 2 or 3 years, and stood from the outside, and you just see all viewpoints of it. And now is kind of my time to try and change it up a small bit and try and push things forward. And it's the team, but it's also trying to get Leash football a little bit more productive about itself. There's great enthusiasm for football in Leash, and there's some great football people in Leash, and it's just a pity to see the way Leash football has gone the last number of years. And my young fellow, the Leash man, I've great interest in trying to push it on and try and get Leash football back on a solid footing.
Yeah, I've mentioned your experience. Obviously, you're in with Justin McNulty as physio. You've trained Kerry with Pat O'Shea, and you've also been the physio for Jack O'Connor. So you've been in All Ireland winning dressing rooms. You know, you've seen preparation and what it takes to win at the very highest level.
I've seen it from little bits of distance. Like, you know, I mean, ultimately, if you're the manager, you have to be on top of everything. And when you're not the manager, you ultimately aren't on top of everything. So, you know, there's lots of little details that I probably missed out on in those dress rooms as well, you know, sure. But I've seen some good fellas manage teams, and you know, likewise through playing and other means, I've seen some poor fellas manage teams. You know, it's kind of stark, the difference between some. You know, like, so, I mean, but the past is the past, and I'm just trying to do what I think is relevant in the game at this moment in time, and the vision I have for the way I'd like a team to play football. And you know, it's only a vision that I have. There's no one with the blueprint, so you know, I'm going to try out my vision against others.
Yeah, so what is that vision, John? Because what I've been hearing is that it's, you know, it's not a surprise, someone coming from Kerry, is that you're, you know, you like to see the ball moved fast and through the foot.
Yeah, not necessarily always through the foot, but like trying to get fellas to keep their heads up and move the ball. The ball is the thing that's the hardest thing to defend. Fellas running and with the ball in hand are not necessarily hard to defend, because you've got a fairly large object that you can, moving at a relatively slow pace compared to how fast the ball can move. So I think we've got to try and keep the ball moving as best we can, and that means fellas working hard to create spaces for others, and maybe, you know, trying to get a team playing together. You know, to my mind, what I like to do is watch the ball and watch what the ball is doing when we're in possession of it. And if that ball is moving fast enough around the field, then I think we've got fellas playing together. You know, if it's not, and if fellas are hugging the ball and following it too much, then the ball is too slow, and it doesn't make us dangerous, you know, or hard to handle.
Yeah. I suppose flexibility is the big thing. Like, I mean, you can have your vision, but then you'll play a team like Carlo, who are a real counter-attacking team, and maybe you have to be a little bit more patient. So, you know, there's different, even in Division 4, there's different styles which make different fights down there too.
There is, yeah. And there's just an appropriateness to how you move the ball facing the opposition that you move, that you're playing on any given day. And there's a fine mix between composure and pace and attack, and there's, you know, like, there are things you really have to work on trying to get the balance of them things right. Like, but you know, like, our fellas are working hard, and you know, to be fair to them, they're pushing themselves as hard as they can inside training, and that's all we can ask for. And then on game day, we really have to try and be true to what we're doing, and try and stay consistent with what we're doing.
Yeah, you have a unique forward line, in that you have three really big men who can win their own ball, and three heavy scorers in Evan O'Carroll, Donny Kingston and Gary Walsh. And I suppose it's trying to find positions for them and fit them in together. And then you have finishers. Like, there is a nice blend in that forward line. You know, if you can keep them all injury free, first of all, and kind of get them on top of what way you want to play the game. But there's danger up there.
Yeah, much in all, there's danger up there. It also provides opposition with a good focal point with regard to, you know, maybe countering our style of play to some degree. But look, we're going to have to be patient, and we're going to have to try and get the mix right with regard to who we're playing in our forwards. Same as any other part of the field to a great degree. And then the guys who are in there are going to have to play together. You know, it's like there's guys with talent up there, but they've got to play together, and they've got to move the ball around to try and create spaces and scores for others, and at different junctures maybe take up different roles in the attack, you know, because teams do start to figure you out if you develop certain patterns. Like, so we'd be a small bit conscious of that.
Yeah, because I suppose that's been a criticism of the last couple of years, has been Donny Kingston's been overused, and he's been that focal point, and has just been a lot of the time he's underused, but like, it's been very obvious when they did use him that, you know, they were going to use him. So that's probably an important thing. Donny's an interesting one, because we spoke on the podcast I think it was last week about comments you had made about him, and kind of throwing the gauntlet down to him. And I'm not sure if we got the quotes exactly right. I was going based off a tweet from Midlands Radio 3. So I read them subsequently, and they weren't maybe as kind of up, as blunt as what I read from the Midlands Radio tweet. So maybe you can tell us we were talking nonsense or clarify them.
You're a Colm, I want you, like, he made what he made out of it. No, I can't stop you talking about it. I can't stop, or I can't rewind the clock to any great degree, nor would I really want to rewind the clock. Donny has come in. He's really put his shoulder to the wheel the last couple of weeks now, and he's driving hard in training. He trained on Tuesday night there and showed great appetite for it, as did every other fella. There was a nice bit of nip in it on Tuesday night. And look, I want you, with the greatest respect in the world, what happens inside the dressing room and what happens between fellas is you know, it can be interpreted 10 different ways by people. I'm not going to chastise you for the way you interpreted it. I heard it, or someone mentioned it to me. And, you know, what is this? You've got the ears of everyone. I have and only want the ears. 35 fellas inside leash, and you know, if I can get them guys to try and put themselves forward as a team that are really going to work hard and really try and go places this year, then that's all I want.
Yeah, well, this is a question I ask a lot of managers, and like, I mean, we've talked again on the podcast about this, is that different managers have different, you know, ambitions for what's important for them for the year. And I guess you're in a position, everybody knows the championship is the most important thing, but getting Laois out of Division 4 is so important for Laois. Like, it shouldn't be down there. So I presume Laois' season started maybe that bit earlier than the Mayos or the Dublins are, just to prepare, you know, to be at a decent level of fitness and football for the National League.
Yeah, well, we started reasonably. No, I would only say reasonably early. To be honest with you, Colm, I think the scenario in Laois is that, you know, with all due respect to our expectations, but I think our peak season will be from when we started to the end of May, you know, and that's with no disrespect, but I think if we can be productive between when we started and the end of May and really get as much as we can out of ourselves, well, then I think we'll have a reasonable basis for our year's football having been productive, you know.
Yeah.
Like, in May, we've got right up to May, we've got the National League to contend with and try and get ourselves out of Division 4, and that still is a huge ambition, because I think we've got to get out of there. And everyone else is trying to do the same thing. But if you can get out of there, and if a team in Division 4 can get out of there, I think they can start to push on a small bit with regard to how they play football and develop a bit of confidence in themselves.
Yeah, no.
And then we've got on March or on May 12th or 11th or 12th, I'm not sure, but we've got the first round of the championship, and then the second round of the championship happens 2 weeks later. And if we could get ourselves, you know, competitive in the Leinster Championship against teams who are playing in higher divisions of the National League, you know, then I think we can say we've had a productive year. Like, but the talk and the expectation, to some degree, I'm not sure it marries well with what has happened in the recent past. You know,
yeah,
people have to stay grounded with regard to, you know, Laois football hasn't been on a great footing, you know, with regard to first round of Leinsters and with regard to National League and stuff like that in the last couple of years. And we really have to focus on trying to get that base camp set up so that we have a positive National League, and then we have a positive outing the first round of the championship. And if we can get that done, you know, I think we'll have a little bit of a difference made, and you know, Laois have to be different. You know,
yeah.
You can talk all you want about the talent and all you want about the availability of talent and what we should be able to do or what we might be able to do, but until such time as we actually do it, then it's only talk.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, definitely the 8 months maybe for Laois is October to May. That's exactly the way, you know, Mayo's might be January to September, but it's completely different for everyone else.
Yeah, but they're different calendars at different time. And as soon as we can get ourselves into June in a positive footing, and then into July in a positive footing, and that might take time to get that, but we just need to get May in a positive footing this year.
Yeah, exactly. Come here, John, just to finish up, what kind of a squad did you come into? Like, did you come into a squad completely torn of confidence, or did you come into a squad a little bit in denial that we shouldn't be here? Like, I mean, what did you, like, you know, what were they like? Was it a squad on its knees that you had to build up, or was it a squad, like I said, in denial that you might have had to give them a few reality checks?
No, not necessarily. I think I came into a squad who had probably, some of the older fellas probably have had a few scars and a few war wounds from past years, but they've gone very positively about it. Most of them guys engaged very positively from the start, and then the young guys came in, they've really been a breath of fresh air, to be fair to them. They've had an awful lot, and Portlaoise fellas came in, some of the young Portlaoise fellas have come in this year and really added a great impetus to us with regard to their application and training and stuff. So I mean, to be fair, we haven't overly mentioned the past to a great degree. We're just trying to sort out what is wrong with the team. So in terms of fitness, in terms of strength and conditioning, in terms of our expectation of players and what they're going to do with the ball and what they're expected to do with the ball, we're just trying to fix them things, and they're the things that are of most relevance to us. Forget the past. The past is the past. I think this group can rewrite their own status to some degree if they really are focused on it. I think they have a chance of doing that, but they just need to keep their heads down and stay working.
Yeah, well, listen, let's hope to do. And come here, usually I wish managers best of luck for the season, but I'll actually mean it when I say it to you. So listen, hope we can get out of Division 4, and like you said, Wexford and Westmeath are potential winnable games, and let's have a little bit of optimism around Laois football for a change.
Yeah, a little bit of optimism is no harm occasionally.
Thanks, John.
So I'm Colin.
Conan Doherty was a fantastic analyst, and I mean, I really heed what he would say in your programme.
I think Tyrone are going to win. I'm going to go with them. As much as I predicted Dublin to win the All-Ireland at the start of the year, I just think Tyrone are going too well. They're unaffected by the other team. Too well set up. I think they've been preparing for Dublin for 2 years. They're ready for them. I'm going to go with it, man.
Mayo and Dublin is the big one in Castlebar this weekend. It's the repeat of last year's All-Ireland Final. It's the repeat of the year before's All-Ireland Final. It should be an absolute huge, huge game on paper. But after the way both teams have started this league, you just kind of fancy a strong win for Dublin. It's not the kind of blockbuster in Mayo, in the Lions' den. Here's Mayo going to get revenge. Mayo are riddled with injuries. They're not going that well. And Dublin, as usual, are just that blue machine that has just kind of continued on. So like you're almost looking at an easy Dublin win here on the balance of what we've seen so far, and on paper, and taking Mayo's injuries into consideration.
You would expect that, but quite often in the past 4 or 5 years, Dublin bring out the best of Mayo, and this will certainly be a game that'll whet their appetite, and it'll be a game that they feel can ignite and light a spark in their season. So, they'll certainly not fear playing Dublin like other teams do fear playing Dublin. They'll go in, probably on a level playing field in terms of not handing Dublin the 2-3 point, advantage at the start, and they'll go in and take the game to them. And listen, the odds are stacked heavily towards Dublin. There's no doubt about it, but you would still feel that Mayo will put up a strong fight and, try to kickstart their season on this particular match.
Yeah, so Killian O'Connor is suspended. Chris Barrett, Donal Vaughan have got knee and hip injuries. Keith Higgins is with the Hurlers. Lee Keegan and Seamus O'Shea are out there battling back, but this might come a little bit too soon. Brendan Harrison is doubtful. On the flip side, Andy Moran and Tom Parsons are expected to be available, but they have missed a game or two. So this is not Mayo's. But then again, you look at it, lads, they were hammered by Dublin last year in the league and had made no posy odds come September. It's a totally new game, back with players fit, ready, focused. We talk about these league games, but what do they matter in the bigger scheme of things?
And that's five defenders you mentioned there that would start for Mayo.
Yeah.
It's just... And they need them, because those are the boys who can go toe-to-toe for Dublin. Those are the lads that let Mayo go man for man all over the field, and they're the ones as well. You're like Keegan, Vaughan, Higgins, they're the ones that get out so well and get at Dublin, and that's really what they were missing against Galway, just people they take their men on. And because Dublin are so zonal and they rely on having everybody set up in those positions, you need someone to take someone on. Like, that was Donegal's problem. They didn't always go at them enough, and when you don't, You're not dragging an other man out of position. They're just set up in their positions, and that's what Mayo do so well all the time against Dublin.
Yeah. See, Dublin are so programmed not to take the ball into the tackle with defensive teams, and to move the ball on through the hand, that when they play Mayo, they're programmed not to take them on when they might have a one on one, and they're programmed to hand pass it and not kick it because they don't want to give it away. Like, I mean, Dublin honestly seriously have to start practicing 15 on 15 a little bit more in training, but like, I mean, that's not the type of teams they generally face. So I'd say 80% of their trainings are with a couple of extra defenders in there against them.
And one game a year they have
one game, a year maybe against Kerry, and they're a little bit shell-shocked as in this isn't what the way we usually work it.
This wasn't the way the script was read.
We've seen them struggle. Dear McConnelly looks like he's going to be back, lad, so Conan, your eyes will light up here straight away. Connolly's he's a funny one, obviously, because Jim Gavin defended him so much last year when that whole thing happened against Carlow, and then when he got back right, didn't put him in and didn't start him for the final. I definitely criticised him for not doing it, and he nearly ended up with a lot of egg on his face. Dear McConnelly came on, didn't have a face on him, and turned the game around for Dublin. So, like, I mean, then you would think he went away and he captained Vincent's to a county title, and you think, you know, he's going to come back and, like Bernard Brogan, for example, and start that league like he's a man on a mission. That's not really happened. Like, maybe he's a couple of niggly injuries. He was in the stand watching the Kildare game because he was tweeting about the wide.
There were quite a few actually watching that particular game, wasn't it?
Yeah, but he's back now anyways. Like, I mean, and just almost like a new signing, kind of.
Well, like... I thought it was very... I think Gavin tried to get by last year without having to use him, and they did need him in the end, and that was the thing. Like, listen, Conley, I don't need to go on about how good he is. These are all fed up with me, listen. Everyone knows that anyway. But the interesting thing is, me and you, Willie, were talking about, like, Dublin are operating at the minute without their half-forward line, which would be O'Callaghan. Kilkenny's obviously playing a bit further inside, and Conley. But those three as well could also play further inside if you wanted them to. They've got so much options. Like, it goes beyond Conley. He is just another add-on that they don't even need at this stage. And maybe it's just because he's in his 30s. I don't know, Stevie, you seem to work it well. Like, Armagh didn't always use their players in the league. They started just timing it well coming into the championship.
Well, I played every league game.
No, well, some of the better players.
Going back to the point that you made about Clucks and earlier on, I also played every league and championship game since I made my debut until I retired.
You didn't... Weren't I injured at all?
No, didn't miss any.
Jeez, that's fair. That's serious luck.
So, but going back to this game...
you know, look, you're the opposite of me. The amount of big games I missed because of, like, pretty much hamstring injuries mostly. Like, I've missed Leinster finals, Sigerson finals, under-21 finals. Like, I often think back of how my career would have been without these injuries, because then with an injury you get disheartened, and I used to act like, you know, like I wouldn't take it well at all, and you know what I mean, you lose focus and you might go on the beer, and it's just a totally different dynamic to a career that is disrupted by injury and, you know, everything that goes along with it.
Well, not saying
I would have been as good as you now or anything if I hadn't been injured.
You never got injured once.
I got injured, yeah, but it never kept me out of a game.
You weren't as soft as Willie, that's what you're saying.
No, it wasn't. I picked up a bad injury 4 days before we played Fermanagh in the first round in 2005, and I was in the best form of my life, and I absolutely busted my ankle, and I got treatment twice a day on it. Went to the horse box, as it was back then, and got the swelling down.
What's the horse box?
The horse box. It was the same as the ice baths back then, but it was an actual ice bath for horses.
Just in Armagh.
This was actually up in Meath. It was in Ashbourne. So I went up there twice a day for the 4 days as well.
And would you just sit on the edge of it and let your foot in? You wouldn't jump into it or anything?
No, you would get into it, yeah. So you would up to waist.
All right.
But and I was fearful that that was going to be a game that I would have to miss out in. But to be fair to Joe Kiernan, he left the decision in my hands because I was playing good football at the time. And the main reason why I wanted to go back for that particular game was Fermanagh knocked us out of the quarterfinals the year before. Yeah. And there was no way I wanted to miss that game. So I ended up playing. I was heavily strapped. I didn't have my best game, whatever, but I ended up playing, got a couple of points, and I think with 5 minutes left Joe took me off, and that was it.
Yeah, the same thing. I always thought an ankle injury was never an injury that terrified me. Hamstring injuries terrified me because you just can't play with them. I've gone over my ankle so many times, but they never worried me, because the strap, if you strap them enough on the outside, they can't really go again. Yeah. You're going to be sore. You can play with an ankle, because I played championship against Westmeath, I think it was 2000. I should never have played the game. Like, my ankle was up in a big big balloon. It was black. I had done it the week before, and I was black all up my calf the whole way up. I did a fitness test, and I said, just strap that strong on the outside, because I'd missed the previous year's championship, and I went, I don't want to miss two in a row, because back then there was no qualifiers. And I played the game, and I just shouldn't have. Like, I couldn't sidestep in off that foot or anything. It was silly.
Sometimes you certainly do it more harm. There's no doubt.
You can do, but you can always play with an ankle injury. I find, no matter even how bad it is, you can strap it up and you'll get through the game. It's not the right thing to do, but they never worried me. It was hamstring
injuries. I'll tell you another story about another injury that I had, and this was the two most serious injuries I ever had, thankfully. But in 2004, we were playing for the international rules. I was playing a club game the week before and got a kick on my foot, and I was in absolute agony. So the first test game against the Australians the following week, I got Dr. Colin Murphy from Cork. He was the team doctor. I was injected, put an injection around my toes where the pain was to numb it. I went and got X-ray, it nothing showed up, it was all fine. I was right, injected, take the pain out of it. So we put in a few injections before the game. At half time the injections were wearing off. I says, injected again. So we injected it again, and in the last quarter I couldn't walk, so I had to come off in the last quarter, and I went back into the hospital the following day, and I had three stress fractures the whole time. So I played the first international rules match that day with three stress fractures. I was out for the second test, and that was the only ever game that I missed because of injury at that level. But from my Armagh career, I never missed a game from my made my debuts.
Yeah, I'll actually just tell one more. It was the very same as that. In training with Leash before a Leinster final in 07 against Dublin, and someone stood on my foot. It was my second, not your big toe, the one beside that. And the pain of it was severe. I was like, Jesus. I went in and I had a look at it and went up to the hospital that night, because you kind of know when the pain is just too much. It's a different pain than just somebody stepping on you. X-rayed it, nothing wrong with you. I was like, do you know, ever get an X-ray and sometimes you're half hoping it shows it's broken, so that you're not acting like you're a big baby, that there's something wrong with, like. But came back anyways that it wasn't broken. I was like, what's wrong with me? This is agony. So when I went back anyways, they asked me in training, is it all right? I says, well, it's not broken anyway, but it's very, very sore. Sure, you'll be grand. So they gave me Panadol before training. Panadol. Like, I was in that agony. So I was running, doing all the training, and in unbelievable pain now, just grinning and bearing it. And before the Leinster final, it was a week later, and I was given two Panadols before the game to get through a game, and I ended up playing well, but in the last 15 minutes it was throbbing so badly that I was like, you know, I could hardly run it. So I went for an MRI scan the week after the Leinster final. My toe was broken.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was like, for God's sake, I could have got an injection, but because nobody was giving me sympathy, because the X-ray showed up no break, and I didn't even want sympathy. I was like, I was kind of biting my lip trying to let on that it's not as bad as it was, because, like, you know, here's a Panadol, you'll be grand. But that's it, X-rays. But anyways, listen, we could talk about injuries for the whole bloody podcast. Maybe we'll do an injuries podcast. I want to talk about Dublin's versatility, lads, because obviously Brian Howard is the only new face, and we talk about all the players that they have, but in the three league games that I can see, like, Baskell's not a new face, he's been there before. Yeah. Howard's not even a new face really, because he got some championship action last year. He's getting a regular run. But Jim Gavin has got Michael Darren-McCauley, who didn't start too many games. He started all three games in the championship. James McCarthy's been playing centre half back. Johnny Cooper's all over the back line, and this is, Conan mentioned the versatility of their half forward line. You look at Dublin's team, like, you never really know how it's going to line out. All of their players, like, it's almost exceptional, as in their defence, Johnny Small could play anywhere. James McCarthy can play in midfield, he can play wing back, centre back. Johnny Cooper, anywhere in the defence. Philly McMahon, anywhere in the defence. Eric Lowndes, anywhere in the defence.
Or half forward, like he did last year.
Or half forward. You've got Kieran Kilkenny, can play anywhere in the forwards. Paul Mannion, corner forward, wing forward. Baskell, anywhere. Paddy Andrews, anywhere, and has done with his club.
Paddy Andrews actually marked me
as a corner back.
As a corner back,
Under Pillar Caffrey.
Yeah.
But the point I'm trying to make, you look at Keane O'Sullivan, can play anywhere along the back line. Dean Rock, wing forward, full forward, centre forward, anywhere. Has there ever been a team to have players that are as movable and as versatile in the history of the game? There's no real player on the Dublin team outside of Fenton where you could say that, like
you can put them anywhere. Well, Michael Darren-McCauley, I don't know if you can put him anywhere.
He's played in the forwards now. He has played centre forward.
He wouldn't be your
he's gone in full forward. No, I get your point. Right, you give the two then, but yeah. Generally in the forwards and the backs, these lads are just
They can move around anywhere and are comfortable anywhere, playing in any of those positions. And I would actually say that the guys in the half back lane,
Kevin
and half forward lanes, can mix and match as well. So
Ono Garra's the only one really that you just have to play
full forward.
It looks like a completely different shape to everybody and the way he moves and stuff. Maybe that's why he's there as well, because that's completely different option.
Yeah.
So I'm not actually sure what positions are up for grabs with Dublin. Or do Dublin need new blood like you think All-Ireland champions do? Or do they just need to shuffle the pack around a little bit maybe? Like, we've seen Kilkenny in the full forward line a little bit. Would it be any harm to play Con Callaghan in the full forward line? And
you mean just to freshen it up?
Just to freshen the whole thing up, you know? Because, you know, Stevie, you've talked in podcasts before about playing in the corner and moving out centre forward. It's like you're reborn. Like, I used to... In hindsight, looking back at my career and being moved around and shifted to different positions wasn't great looking back, but I loved it at the time. It was new and it almost like a new season, you know what I mean? Your whole refreshed, looking to prove yourself all over again.
Absolutely. I can only talk about from personal experience. When I was moved from the corner right to the half forward line, you know, I felt, geez, this is a great opportunity for me to show what I can really do as a forward and as a footballer. You know, I can be creative from here, but I can also get in the end of moves and score as well, like I was doing on the inside line. But it definitely gives a player a re-energised lease of life you know, that they can go out and prove to their manager that, you know, I'm not just a one-trick pony here, that you put me in the corner and keep me in the corner, I can move around and I can play football in any position.
That's the thing. They're so, like, I mean, this is they're so natural and they're able to play everywhere, and if they're playing Tyrone they'll play that game, and then they can change it up now maybe if they're playing Mayo. And tactically, like, it's very hard to find weaknesses with Dublin. It's just very, very, very hard to find it.
Yeah, and all the subs that they have, the boys that are being used, they're exactly the same. Like, they're boys that can come in and play anywhere. You look at Howard, like, he's playing wing back for DAT and then he's playing midfield for his club,
like,
playing half forward
cornerback in the Auburn Cup.
Like, you know, so it is just this collection of players who almost like that. They need it because they're playing that sort of basketball thing a lot, where they're all getting back and they're all getting forward together. Everyone defends, everyone attacks. And yeah, I suppose they're looking just at 14 players who can play football, and they have 28 of those, I suppose.
Yeah, so that's the big game in Division 1. And like we said, we'd imagine that Dublin are going to win that one. Have you picked accumulators, lads? Are we going to do accumulators
after
even
all
after
the talk of a bad night
even
own.
After our chat? It's hard to know. Like, I mean, have you picked accumulators?
I've looked at a few teams.
I'm scrambling
one
here
so,
to do one
there. So give us your one there, Stevie.
Okay, I'm going to go with Donegal at home to Kildare. I think they'll pick up the first points of the league campaign. They've been playing exceptionally good football and a nice brand of football this year, and they've got the players to do so as well. And I think by winning the McKenna Cup last weekend as well and beating Tyrone will do their confidence no harm. And by playing at home in Ballyshannon, it'll be a difficult place for Kildare to go.
You'd imagine the travelling involved as well. That's a fairly sure home win.
That's the first one that I'll choose. The second one that I'm going for is, and you'll be delighted to hear this, Conan, Derry.
What?
Derry away to Fermanagh.
I just put Fermanagh down,
you know,
in my...
Derry away to Fermanagh. Yeah. Do you know what? I was actually not going to... I was looking at Division 2 and Cork Cavan is the big game in Division 2. There's very obvious. Tipmead is a big game too. But I was looking at Division 3 and I was thinking there's no big games in Division 3 because it's the four strong teams against the four weak teams.
No, I would... I just think that Derry have... probably the upper hand in terms of, you know, tradition over Fermanagh, and I think that this is a game that they can win.
You were falling into the old nostalgia trap.
Derry
are a good team.
Fermanagh are certainly a good team and one of the better teams in that division, but I think Derry can certainly win this game, and I'm going to go with Derry in this.
For what it's worth, I think Fermanagh will win that one by 5+.
Okay, that's fine, and that's why we all have our own opinions. And the other one in that division, Westmeath at home to Sligo, I'm going to go there. And so that's three, so Donegal, Derry and Westmeath so far, and then I'm going to stick with Laois away to Wicklow in Division 4.
Yeah, okay, you'd fancy Laois to win that one. Again, in Division 4 it seems to be the stronger teams against the week. You'd fancy Carlow strongly, you'd fancy Laois strongly, you'd fancy Antrim strongly, then Leitrim Limerick might be a bit of a toss up in Limerick. Conan, go on ahead there.
You like the Stevie 23-1 accumulator. Alright, Dublin easy enough against Mayo. Fermanagh, easy enough against Derry.
For most rationally thinking people.
Carlow away to Waterford.
Okay, what about the mind game? What about the mind games and the referee? No. You don't know what's going to happen down there now after.
And then I'm You know, I like a draw, so I'm going to go a draw. Donegal, Kildare.
Donegal, Kildare.
It's a tough one to call. Both teams haven't won yet. They're not used to winning. They both need to win.
I think it's a good call for a draw. I really do. I don't think Kildare will have any fear for Donegal. You'd fancy Donegal with all the travelling Kildare are doing. I think I'm going to do the four games in Division 1. I'm going to €5 on each game as a draw.
Oh, I think it's, you're not sticking with that, are
no,
you?
No, because you accumulator. Please look at this. Please look at this. Monaghan, Tyrone, Donegal, Kildare. One of the two of them will be a draw. You've heard it. And Kerry Galway, well, that's in Aston Stack Park. Maybe not in that one, and definitely not in the other one. I think Monaghan and Tyrone has draw written all over it. You'd be kicking yourself if you don't get on this. Like, I mean, they're two evenly matched teams who will play a similar style against each other. And Donegal, Kildare are pretty evenly matched teams as well. And it has to happen, lads. Like, we're talking about statistics and the laws of averages here. Like, this has to happen. This is not my opinion. Statistically, this has to happen.
This is physics. There was a tenner the last time he put on every game. It's gone down to a fiver.
Yeah, he's losing faith himself.
€40 might be a little bit too much to be going along with. Don't want to be promoting that. So that's it, lads. That's all we've time for. We will talk to you on Monday with the review show. Good luck.
Yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.